Hello.
Hello.
Good evening.
Good evening.
All right. Edited. Agilitarian. Generalizations. Vowels. Mirror. Derailed. Genre. Villain. Chef. Tendentially. I screwed it up. Almost. Damn it.
Almost.
Characteristics. Free. Electricity. Idiosyncrasy. Geographical. Pseudo. Consciousness. In on it. Edited it. Wi-Fi. Anniversary. How many was that?
I'm going to give you 15 out of 20. How's that?
It's an improvement.
It is. I could not do the same. Next week, I'm going to read some words I find difficult and we'll see. I'm not going to get 15 out of 20. I'm going to get like 8.
So, welcome to Small Differences, your favorite cultural exchange program.
The program where we read out lots of lists of words.
Let's do an episode with just a list of words sometime. The sixth installment.
We're still here. Our audience is still here. Maybe.
And slowly growing, I guess. Or perhaps decreasing
I
since
can't
Christmas.
tell. I can't tell. I think everyone had a lot of leisure time on their hands at Christmas and they didn't have anything better to do than listen to the podcast. I think the acid test is what do they do in the dog days of January when there's no hope in life? Do they turn to us?
So, dog days, has that anything to do with the four-legged animal?
I guess. Oh God, don't ask me to give you the etymology of this phrase. It doesn't reflect well on dogs. I love dogs, and I don't think they come out with this phrase looking all that great. Next week, we'll follow up with an explanation of what the hell dog days are.
I guess it's really easy for us to be expected to be the etymology podcast, which we are not.
Not yet. There's still time.
I think we are the approximate knowledge of many things podcast, which was a
Yeah.
horrible way to phrase that, but you
Fractionally
know.
less catchy, perhaps.
All right. I forgot to talk about the weather. How's the weather in Oslo?
It's been mixed. A couple of your colleague came to visit. In fact, you both came to visit from Bergen last week, and there was, it's fair to say he brought the weather with him. It was a word that doesn't get used a lot in parts of the UK outside Scotland. It was drich, which is
What was that?
drich, which is this lovely word which basically means it's wet, it's miserable, it's kind of gloomy.
In Scottish?
In Scotland, yeah.
It sounds almost German.
Yeah, I think
But
so.
that's a CH, I think.
Yeah, maybe. We got some words that end in CH.
But in drij, how do you say that?
Drich.
Oh, that. Wait, I can't. My brain isn't connected to do that sound.
We'll work on it.
Drij. Oh.
H. You can make a
Her.
h noise, right? Like in German.
Her.
It's just
Her.
that. Drich.
Drij. Anywho, in that kind of weather, it's good to train on inside. And you have been to the fitness center
I
again.
have. I have. I went to be abused by a highly paid member of the fitness industry for money. I'm now ashamed. It was good actually. It was a good session. It didn't overtly look like it was going to be hard, and then it was. So I guess that worked.
You had a PT, right?
I did. This is what everybody calls it here. I'm fascinated by this. The PT stands for.
Personal trainer.
Right. I don't hear them called that. I didn't hear them called that in the UK. Maybe people do. I don't know. Maybe I'm a
I
little
think
off the pulse.
I think it's an American aspiration or something.
You've been training.
I have.
You've been doing something that looks frighteningly macho from the video.
Well, I haven't seen the video myself. I just picked the first thing that came up on YouTube. Yeah, so I'm doing something called grit. It sounds very masculine, I guess. But it's me and 15 women. So, I guess.
That makes you extra masculine. Like, if you just plot all those people on a curve, you are at the absolute masculine end of that spectrum.
I'm not sure, but I guess it seems that men doesn't do group training things.
I think it's rarer. I see it, but it's I agree, it's rarer. I don't know why that is.
They like to sit and do nothing on the training equipment.
I'm sure they're working very hard.
Mm. But yeah, it's basically intensive strength training. So
cool.
You got a lot done on a short time.
I wanted to ask about this, actually, because I thought, like, that looks like a good workout. But I was thinking a bit more about the extent to which people work out here. And I think I can safely say that the colleagues that we have, people seem to do way more exercise than colleagues I've had previously in the UK. Like your baseline level of how much people train.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know. Like, it could be about lots of things, right? It could be about there's a kind of higher level of idealism here in Norway about what people aspire to in terms of kind of personal goals or, you know, the ideals, physical ideals or sort of health ideals. It might be that the discourse around exercise is very different here. It's just kind of like the higher base level of this is you're going to do some exercise, whoever you are. You know, like we work with nerds. I don't think I'm insulting anyone to say that. And there's a kind of a bit of a like a what I'm going to call a Marmite distribution. We'll put a pin in that for just now. But there's like a bathtub distribution a little bit in the nerd world. I think like the people who are really serious about working out and people who never work out and very few people in between. Is that the case here? It was my experience in the UK.
I think perhaps it's more even or straight, the line. But do you think that, is it we that train more than usual or you that train less than usual? Where's the baseline?
Well, that's a question that's just going to echo in my brain for eternity. Is there a baseline? If you surveyed, I've got to say, I think if you went around the world and surveyed how much exercise people do, not in the course of their kind of daily lives, so not counting people who do manual jobs, physical jobs, but just like how much voluntary exercise people do, I've got to figure that Norway's pretty close to the top, based on an entirely unscientific sample. But like one of the things that I guess characterizes working out and stuff like that is that you have enough free time and money to be able to do that. And you're not throwing away time, right? That you could be earning money with, or
yeah, and actually, I think it's regular to have that you can take some of your hours out to train, like a perk in your at your job that you work. Actually,
should I bring this up at my next review?
Well, you know that you will be reimbursed like 1,000 kroner for exercise expenses.
Right. One of my colleagues mentioned this the other day. I didn't know that.
It's on the internet.
It's super cool. Is this typical in Norway?
Either that or that you can use like in half an hour every week to train or something.
Nice.
Hmm.
And so do you think
I think it's incentivized by many companies because of the obvious health reasons.
Because they don't want their employees to die in the chair.
Or take sick days.
Or take sick
days. Which is more expensive, I guess.
Hmm.
Because they still have to pay you a salary when you are sick. Because this is a welfare state.
I was reading in the week about Russia. where Vladimir Putin's government want to ban outright the sale of cigarettes. And I became somewhat conflicted, as you might expect. Like, this is a thing that I completely agree with, and it's probably the only thing to come out of Russia in the last 30 years that I completely agree with.
Yeah, we are getting closer to that as well in Norway.
That's less surprising, though. This is a country of right heads. That's a country of right heads ruled by some very, very bad people.
Russia or Norway?
Fair
because
question.
I would tend to agree, actually. But
yeah. I don't want to be anti-Russian. I just like their current and several previous governments.
We love Russia.
Da.
The small difference is endorsement for Russia. Right. Moving on. You took a picture from the fitness center last week. Because this is a podcast, and obviously pictures are
difficult, challenging. Exactly. We can link to it in the show notes, though. It's fine.
But could you describe what you called a torture instrument? Or
yeah. So, listeners, picture a long rack that's maybe like 4 or 5, maybe 6 meters long. And it's got a kind of A-frame, like a swing, like a garden swing. And dangling from the rack are many straps. And from the straps, on the straps, there are handles. It's not totally clear to me, like I can make some semi-educated guesses about how these might be used, but it does look a little bit like torture equipment. What gives?
I think it's a basic lesson on context. Because if you find yourself in an apartment and the apartment's owner is perhaps named Christian Grey or something, that would be, I guess, something for sex or approximate to that. But in a fitness center, it's slings, which you use for sling training, which allows you to use your body weight to train.
But what exactly do you do with them?
You hang from them by your arms, and you do lift ups and or from your legs, and do all the normal body weight exercises.
So to be clear,
allows you to sort of increase and decrease the difficulty or weight, because you are allowed to do push ups on an angle, for example.
Ah, okay. So I was thinking about sort of stepping back and like leaning back into this thing, but theoretically you could lean forward from it as well, right?
Yeah.
Ah, I need to think about this. I need to go and watch people.
You can lean in all ways of all kind of directions.
And people really put their feet in it as well?
Yeah.
This I gotta see. I'm not gonna try it because I'm gonna fall on my ass, but this I want to see people do.
So you could put your feet in them and do push-ups, like, right? Which would move more weighty, I guess.
Yeah, okay. I can see that. Do you think this describing gym equipment podcast thing is going to take off?
Yeah.
We're going to be huge. Mostly in Scandinavia, but we're going to be huge.
Next week, the rowing machine.
I know how to use a rowing machine.
But do you know how to describe it on a podcast?
Almost certainly not. I'll do that after you read another list of words.
Right. So much for training or torture instruments. I guess you could still call it a torture instrument.
Ask me tomorrow about how I feel about gym torture. Today is not the day. It's always the day after or the day after that.
I saw you had the Santa at the office this weekend.
We did. I wasn't there, but Santa was indeed spotted at our offices. I'm a little surprised by this because I thought Christmas was kind of done for this year.
Yeah, you would think so.
Yeah, but it turns out that Santa rocked up and gave all the kids presents, which is nice. I thought he'd be on holiday in January, but I don't know, maybe he gets overtime.
I think he had some sick days or something he has to do over.
Yeah, figures. I wanted to come back to the in the office thing. briefly.
Yeah.
We talked last time about socks and about taking off your shoes in the office. And as it happened the following day, for whatever reason, I kept getting static electric shocks off things. That happens sometimes. I don't know if it's the shoes that I wear or the floor or the chairs that are plastic and you can kind of rub against them and after a while it kind of builds up static or what. But I took off my shoes in the office. Felt very good. I liked it. It was entirely unremarkable. It would not have been entirely unremarkable in a British office. This made me very happy.
Norway, the land of the free feet.
Three or free?
Free.
There's a really good Latin slogan in there somewhere, but I got nothing right now.
So while sliding around on your socks, did you read any Max Weber?
I did not. I got as far as looking Max Weber up on the internet. There is you can find his big work online. We can put it in the show notes. It is a tome. I will say it is quite a long PDF, but the length of the PDF has nothing on the lengths of some of the words in the PDF. Well, that doesn't actually work from a room point of view, but you know what I mean. It's like I'm not afraid of abstract nouns, but abstract nouns in German talking about this particular stuff. I read some aloud. I read about two pages aloud just to see if I could, and I understood very little of it.
And interestingly, the book contains like four sentences, I think.
Maybe
sentences
five, but
in German are really, really long. They can never end.
Are they longer than Norwegian?
Yeah, easily.
Why?
I'm not a linguist, but I'm not sure. It's probably something to do with the German mindset.
Returning to this in a future episode, the German mindset. Weltanschauung. I also want to call out the typography of that PDF, which is just a joy in a kind of a weird and perverse way. There are some words that are just typeset with like huge, huge spacing. I think it's a casualty of trying to constrain the paragraph width. And some of it's hilariously uneven. Old school typography.
It's not a bug, it's a feature.
I guess. It was fun. I may not be reading Max Weber anytime soon is the short version of this story. But other people can, so we should put the link out there.
I guess you could get the audiobook.
I could. It'd be quite soothing to have someone read the sort of German philosophy to me, actually. I'd quite like that.
Yeah, for those of you, if this sounds vaguely familiar, we are in the section called follow-up, where we sort of follow up on previous things.
Yeah, we're not going to do a whole episode about Max Weber again, probably. Yeah. You sent me a link and said, should we comment on this thing? So tell me about the thing.
The thing. Now I feel willfully unprepared. Well,
good. That's how I felt after the Santa comment. Get with it.
That was a desperate attempt to get you to ask the question on which date Christmas decorations should come down.
Oh, man.
That I have the answer to.
Tell me, when should the Christmas decorations come down?
The 13th day after Christmas, that is 6th of January.
So this is interesting because the UK, it's the same date actually, but the UK would say it's the 12th day after Christmas. In either case, this has not happened. There are so many Christmas decorations still up in Oslo.
What we need is a Christmas police.
That's what the world needs. World needs is more police, more policing of Yule, and you know those kinds of things.
The Christmas police is actually a thing in Norway.
What?
It's more a saying than an organization. But you have some people that care deeply about all the traditions around Christmas, and they. They will get angry if they catch you eating pinachot or such things before the 24th.
Really?
Mm.
What do they do about the department stores and places that start selling Christmas decorations in like September, October? They must lose their minds.
I think they write angry letters to the newspapers and go by begrudgingly while scoffing.
That's how it's done. It's very British sounding, actually.
Mm.
Lots of pent up rage.
So you are allowed to hint strongly that perhaps it's time to take down all the Christmas decorations at the office.
No, we had a big tidy up. I don't think we have any left. But out there in the real world.
You also got robbed, I guess, so.
Yeah. They didn't take the decorations or the booze.
Hmm.
Which seems like an oversight, but whatever.
Right. So yeah, back to the article. Because one feature of the Norwegian mindset is that we love to be recognized and seen by the outside, being all the countries outside of Norway. And I think we have touched up on it on the hygge topic, but apparently the Brits just love Scandinavia and Norway and cannot get enough of it. Is that true?
Well, I moved here, a British person here, first time Norwegian. I moved here. To be fair, it's great. Like, why everyone doesn't just move here, I don't know. Well, I know practically, like, there's probably lots of really, really important reasons people don't do it. Like, they don't have any money, or they think you all eat reindeer or whatever all the time. I don't know. But this is not data. You've asked me about data here.
Mm.
This is not data. This is anecdote. And
sometimes anecdote is the best data.
I can hear one of my PhD supervisors just rotating at about 150 RPM right now. The plural of anecdote is not data, is a favorite phrase of his. And yeah.
What is data if not structured bias?
That's a whole other podcast.
But when was the first time? Well, I guess we have talked about this earlier, but is it just you, or is Scandinavia or Norway something that you would guess most Brits know about or care about even?
I think in very particular ways. So, this is not going to go over well, but IKEA, you're British, ABBA, sorry, both Swedish, Lego,
Danish.
I know, Danish pastries, not really Danish. I'm really trying to think of something. It's really hard to objectively say what, if anything, people think about Norway specifically, because having been here as a kid and now being here now, I can't go back to that state of not knowing. I do know that people think it's cold here a lot of the time. Like when you say, I'm moving to Norway, people are like, oh, isn't it really cold there in the summer? And then you tell them you were bathing in the sea on the weekend in July or August, and they're really surprised. So the perception is it's unbelievably far north and often really cold. So, and I don't think we think about it very much. I don't know how much of that comes down to the population size, which is small by the UK standard and certainly by the US standard, right? It's not a large country. Most people know where Oslo is, I would guess. I don't know. It's really hard to unknow this stuff. I can't return to the beginner's mind on this at all.
Could you add sort of could you try to find out? Can you talk with some of your fellow countrymen or women and have a mini survey?
I can. It will be highly unscientific. The sample will not be representative in any way, probably.
Well, actually, it will be representative in a way. It's
okay.
Just that we don't know in which way it will be representative.
This humanities relativism is seeping back into the show. I'm trying to drag us to the side of objectivity, but I can't do it. You said something really interesting, which is that Scandinavians love to be loved and seen, especially by the UK and US. Is that because you feel invisible? To turn the question back to you.
Good question. This is tricky because... when we are so taken by being recognized, it's also often disseminated when we are. So I would guess, and this is of course highly my opinion, that Norwegians perhaps believe that people outside Norway are much more aware of Norway than they actually are. So we don't feel invisible. We feel highly significant in the world. We are the ones that have the Nobel Peace Prize, right? And Ibsen and Knausgård and Røyksopp, which everyone in the world knows about, right?
Probably more yes than no, yeah, on all of those, yeah.
Well, and perhaps they know them, but perhaps they don't know that they are Norwegian.
I'm thinking about the availability heuristic, which is a big nerdy psychology thing about the ease with which you bring something to mind affects your ability to judge how representative it is, right? Mm. But I'm also, so from that point of view, I'm thinking about how, of course, Norwegians think that all this stuff is well known because it's very well known to them. It's impossible to make that judgment objectively. But also I'm thinking what a miserable life it would be if you went through life thinking, well, there's only 5 million of us and no one's ever going to have heard of us and we've never produced anything of value. So really, we're alone here in the world. And that doesn't seem like a very healthy way to go through life. So it's good that you guys are proud of what you do.
Well, I'm pretty certain now that feeling invisible isn't a problem in Norway.
Say more?
No, because I don't recognize the kind of feelings that you just described in my fellow countryans, which is a new word.
It's cool. We can make our own. That's how we roll.
Yeah, and apropos, I just posted it. I just posted this link because... my government continues to provoke me, or more specifically, my minister of so-called integration continues to provoke me, because we are having this hard line on illegal immigration or immigration at all, and for all of you that follows the news. We are not really that great in taking in, for example, refugees and so on. And now the Minister of Integration has given a new task for all those extra bureaucrats that we had to employ during the refugee crisis, which is not over. Namely, they are now set to go into old cases and find those who has lied to get in the country, which perhaps isn't necessary from an integration standpoint. Anywho, so this week this case blew up in the media about a guy that came here when he was 14. Since that, he got an education. He's a bioengineer. He helped out with the first Ebola case in Norway. He has a family. He's well integrated and all that. And he has not now lost his citizenship. So he is stateless, which is, yeah, mind-blowing to me that we can do that. Or perhaps we can't, but yeah. And it says something about, I think, the kind of politics that are in power now.
There's a really interesting contrast between this and the whole Hygge conversation, right? Like, people are looking to Scandinavia and going, oh, it's so warm and cozy and comforting and clean and well-designed and everything like that. And then there's this whole other thing going on, which is, yeah, we're not going to take any Syrian refugees. It's a pretty stark divide. And you don't sound proud at all of being Norwegian at this moment, despite what we were talking about 5 minutes ago.
No. I'm not. Well, no. And I think it's important to highlight that part of Norway as well.
Yeah. You can't have the one thing without the other, right? Well, exactly. We could. Theoretically, we could have none of this whatsoever, but that doesn't appear to be how it works.
And it's weird because when you're doing a podcast like this and talk about the small differences and the brunost and how we spend our Christmas and so on, you tend to rehearse all the superfluous stereotypes of how Norway is or what it entails to be Norwegian, right? But and this is the same kind of stuff that these kind of politicians also rehearse. So this minister also said that in Norway we eat pork, deal with it.
That's not very subtle, is it?
No, not at all. So yeah.
Was anyone suggesting that pork should not be eaten in Norway?
Well, you have those which pork would be not halal.
Yeah, but like no one is suggesting that sort of other Norwegians stop eating pork, right?
No.
Yeah, straw man.
Straw pork.
Straw pig.
So, we have a main topic.
We do.
We said last week that we are going to unpack how to be social in Norway, which will be very easy because the simple answer is you're not. Done. See you next week.
If only it were that simple. It's really not, though, right? I geared up for coming here by reading and talking to people and generally trying to get my head around, okay, like, what is the deal with Norwegians? Because the popular conception here and I guess abroad is that Norwegians are a little bit unfriendly, a little bit removed. And I'm like, hello, but have you been to the UK? You know, you can do we can do friendly and unfriendly and removed. And I have seen nothing to convince me that Norwegians are kind of distant or emotionally unavailable or unfriendly or cold or unwelcoming or whatever. And I guess, like, given the previous conversation, you've got to take that with a pinch of salt and go, yeah, but okay, I'm white, middle class, affluent, blah, blah, blah. I've got all this stuff going for me. That means I'm not instantly rejected by Norwegian culture. In fact, this is one of the few countries in the world where I can potentially, like, not look overtly like a foreigner. I don't look Norwegian, but I don't look not Norwegian. And there are not many countries in the world that I can say that about. So I call bullshit.
Yeah, but this is this is kind of an image that is just also by Norwegians themselves. So you got two things. You got the half yearly student exchange student letter that often from the US that complains about Norwegians not talking to each other in public space, not saying hello at the bus and so on, that we are cold and distant and yeah, and it's also something Norwegians tend to say to foreigners when they are abroad or something, that oh, in Norway we are very cold and introverted, and but when we drink we come out and we will be your best friend, right? That this is a usual thing that we say about ourselves, but it's interesting that you
it's
didn't
not
get
true
that.
I've had more conversations yeah. in like the apartment building that I live in with people ever than I had in the UK, I think. More highs, more smiles, more... So, bullshit. Just saying.
And this, I think I can say, and not in comparison to other cultures at all, because I... but I think Norwegians tend to be friendly and helpful. But they will perhaps not take the initiative always.
As a British person who is deeply ambivalent about that kind of taking the initiative bit in social interactions, I'm okay with that. There's plenty of room for kind of uncertainty in this conversation.
but going back to the small difference, if you share the uncomfortable, it's going on the list, the discomfort of taking the social initiative, where do we sort of part in our casual socialization in, for example, public space? Because an impression we have of Britain is that you are very polite.
Fuck off. In public spaces?
Yeah, for example, at the store or DMV or... yeah.
In what ways are we polite? How does this manifest?
Perhaps I confuse you with the US now, but don't you also use like, here you are, sir, and stuff like that? Or perhaps not that common in the UK anymore?
That's a more US thing, I would say. It does happen in the UK, but I think infrequently. It's surprising when it happens in the UK, whereas it seems quite routine-ish in the US. Mm. To me, as a casual visitor of the US, I haven't lived there. Yeah. It's hard to talk about the public space thing, because I think people's conduct in general in public spaces is fairly British. Unsurprising.
In Norway?
In Norway. Like, I don't... When I go through public spaces, there's really nothing apart from people's disconcerting ability to bump into each other. There's really nothing that distinguishes it from the UK.
But how about interactions with clerks or what have you?
Surprisingly polite, often really upbeat. Our local supermarket, the people who work there are lovely. They always smile. They always say hello. They're super cheerful. I think maybe they're all students, they're all kind of that age, but they're so nice. Like, a nearer store open to us, but we hardly go in there because the people at the other store are so much nicer. So, positive, un-Norwegian, if that's a thing, customer service does actually happen here. Sorry to burst your bubble there.
Have you had any bad experiences?
I think I probably had a few indifferent customer experiences, but trust me, being British completely inures you to that. Like, you're just unfazed by that. You're like, oh, this is the default mode. I'm fine. I know where I am with this. It sucks, but everyone knows it. That's great. But nothing that stands out, honestly. I think sometimes one can wait for a little while before being noticed, but if I'm honest, that happens in the UK quite a lot as well. So, yeah, nothing there at all. The differences that I notice are much more about the workplace stuff. And it doesn't go in the direction you would necessarily think. So the thing that I noticed very, very early on So lots of people in the office, and we do have really nice colleagues, so I don't know how typical this is. They touch you on the arm when they're talking to you, particularly if it's about something to do with feelings or emotions, or if something is particularly great or sad or whatever. Lots of touching on the arm and on the shoulder. And in the UK, it's really rare to do that. To the point where when it started, I was like, oh, this is quite unfamiliar. But I don't mind it because it's done so nicely. I worked with a girl for a while from Ireland, and she's very touchy. You know, she would touch you on the arm a lot when she spoke to you. And it was delightful. It was a really charming trait. But it's unusual in the UK. And so it's something I noticed when I started working here. But colleagues, if you're listening, don't stop doing it. It's really sweet. But don't be creepy either.
Please continue to touch Chris.
Inappropriate, workplace appropriate ways. Thank you.
I would think that this has something to do with being extroverted or being that kind of a person. Because I wouldn't do that.
You're in many ways a raging extrovert, though. You're going to have to justify yourself at some point. I know you're an introvert, but you're also not.
I'm an extrovert, as all comedians are. Really an introvert, but on sort of the like scene, you go into this.
There's a performance
role.
Mode. I get it.
But should we rehearse these categories? Aren't they bullshit? Is the extroversion, introversion thing?
Well, to use a word you seem to like, I don't know about the opera. I can't pronounce it, even in English.
Operationalization.
Yeah. I just got my ass handed to me in English.
This is one of the words I have said the most for the 10 last years. So.
Okay. I don't feel bad. Yeah, like, I like the kind of concept. I think it's probably more useful than not. It's a spectrum. It's not like a coin flip, right? Like, everybody's somewhere on that continuum at some point. It's not always consistent. I know I go in and out. I'm sure everyone does to some extent.
But I can recognize, like, if socialization leaves you with more or less energy. And for me, it's usually less, I guess. I get tired. I find it really fun, but I get tired.
The same, like, there's a point where a switch flips, and you're just like, I'm done here. I was having an awesome time, and now I'm done.
But let's not do the thing that every podcast do, namely go into the extrovert-introvert thing.
Right.
but yeah, touching. It's not something that I'm aware of. So perhaps it may be a thing.
I don't know how much you guys do it in the Bergen office. Sorry, you guys are a very sexist phrase. You all.
We tend to bathe together, but
yeah, about that.
Oh, we are okay.
Well, you're not just gonna leave that hanging. Come on, the audience is like, wait, what?
Yeah, we don't tend to do it, but it has happened, and it was, well, initially it was a bit awkward, and then it was not.
I've got to ask, did you all go full Swedish or whatever and, like, take off all your clothes, or was it sort of strictly swimming gear?
Swimming gear.
We have to ask.
Yeah, of course you have. There are some, I think there's some context in which you could find yourself naked with your colleagues. Some get naked on the Christmas table, not on the table, but perhaps under the table. That is a party for out of relationship experiences, I guess. And if you do any kind of business sports like football or whatever, then you will tend to be naked in the dressing room and showers and stuff.
No doubt. I once went to a conference in Finland, and it was a lovely conference with lovely people. And we had dinner the night before the first day of the conference. And I said, I noticed that in the in the schedule. Tomorrow evening there is a meal with everyone and a sauna. And I tried to be really casual about this, and I said, will the sauna be mixed, you know, men and women? And they were like, oh no, this isn't Sweden.
Indeed.
But I was the next night, because, you know, if you're going to do this, then you got to do it. The next night I was fully naked in a room with my female colleagues at the conference. You got to try this stuff, I guess. It was nowhere near as painful as I thought it would be.
Did you have any spirits before? Did you have to drink yourself to courage?
I don't recall. I don't think so.
You don't recall? Okay. That's
that could
answer.
Go either way, right? Yeah, you asked me anything else about the evening. My answer is going to be, I don't recall.
What happens in Finland stays in Finland. Except when you're telling it on a podcast, I guess. They implied that in Sweden you would have been mixed.
Yeah.
Hmm.
At a work do. You know, this was like a professional conference.
I tried to think that if that would or could happen in Norway. I don't think so, but perhaps also if the median age in our company was a bit higher, perhaps.
What's that about? The age thing?
I think, the older you get, the less embarrassed about your body, I guess.
Right. Well, you've already just experienced so much cumulative embarrassment in your life that you're like, I'm done here. Hmm. I can't feel any worse.
Exactly.
It's a bit sad, isn't it?
What is?
People are like massively inhibited about their bodies. Is that a thing that is a problem here?
Why do you think we do so much exercise?
Well, is that what it's about?
Yeah, for some, I guess. There's certainly a body ideal, I guess.
I'm wondering if it's kind of people hold themselves to a higher standard here. That sounds really judgmental. That's not what I mean at all. There are higher quote-unquote ideals here. Like, people feel more pressure to be, like, Scandinavians are typically, you know, stereotypically sort of tall and good-looking and flawless, you know, physically flawless and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, and I think the health aspect is also pretty present, because when you have sort of all your needs covered, like materially and so on, I guess it would be easy to spend your time on yourself,
right?
And being healthy and finding the right foods and doing the right exercises and so on and so on.
Is that like a noble pursuit though, or is it like tipping into vanity? Like, where's the line?
I'm not sure vanity is the right term, but we have a concept which is actually studied, which is called the therapeutic age. So it's post secular age. So after religion and the big institutions stop to matter so much, to be present, we found another a way in which is health and the individual and growth and so on. So we lean to more towards spiritual things, be it about your body or mind.
One of the things that I've wondered about in relation to this is Alsung. Now I'm just trying to make you spit out your drink. But seriously, this is a thing that has crossed my mind, is that, like, this is a thing that people do here in the summer especially, right? Is that they come together in huge groups and they sing, like, popularly. Like, it's like church, but without any religion.
Yeah, they gather around the bonfire and they burn some deviant and they sing aloud. to the pagan gods.
That is not what I saw on TV. That is not what happened. It was a bunch of very kind of, some slightly bored looking people, admittedly, out on a kind of nice, warm, rainy evening in Oslo outside singing while someone famous-ish, like a level kind of grade C celebrity person, sort of.
You talk about Allsang på Grensen. This. Well, it's exactly that. It's families and old people in a huge group, and some has-beens and.
I'm laughing at has-beens. That's brutal. That's completely brutal.
And they sing cheesy songs.
I've got to say, this is...
It's like massive karaoke or something.
It's completely unfathomable to someone from the UK. I saw it on Swedish TV before, and then when we came here, I saw it on Norwegian TV. I was just like, they really do this. And it's a huge deal, right? So many people take part in these kinds of things in the summer.
Well, I haven't been to Glastonbury or any of the British music festivals, but I would guess you could describe it like an Iron Maiden concert with chairs.
I think the difference is that, like, Allsang is intrinsically participatory, though, right? Like, everyone has gone there to sing. It's not just the famous person that is singing. Like, that's what differentiates this from, say, something like Glastonbury, right? Where you are going there to watch someone else perform. And here, the going and singing as well is part of the whole deal.
Yeah, that's true.
That's completely different.
Hmm.
It is. It's like mass karaoke.
But you participated in Allsang on Friday.
As did you, I would like to point out. It was unexpected.
<I did. laughs> because it's also a part of company culture and family gatherings. So all the life cycle rituals would tend to include Allsang.
The only British thing that I can think of that would do this is a birthday party where people sing happy birthday. Which, by the way, is not the same happy birthday that gets sung here. It's a completely different happy birthday.
So if you find yourself at a Norwegian family party, for example, confirmation or a baptism.
Start it again. We can edit.
I don't think people do it at the funerals, but... Well, if you are invited to such a party, you will, under your plate, you will find a sheet with 2 to 5 songs, depending on how extroverted the family is. And these are typically songs that you kind of know, but not really, and someone, the creative in the family, has... made the lyrics, which kind of rhymes and kind of goes to the melody, but kind of not. And you have to sing these songs and sing along with people that are usually tone deaf.
I was going to ask you about what do you do if you can't carry a tune, but now I'm just fascinated by the idea. These are not just popular songs. These are songs where someone has replaced the lyrics with their own lyrics so that they can be sung.
Yeah, to have the personal twist on it.
I can't even. This is extraordinary.
And so you got a touch of this at the company party on Friday.
Mm. It was genuinely interesting to be part of. I actually really like singing together with people, but you have to want to be there. You have to want to do the thing. Like, if you're not comfortable in that moment or in that space of singing with everybody, I totally get that is not everybody's thing.
You are completely correct. You have to want to be there. And many did not.
Enforced fun is not fun.
Interestingly, the CEO of our sister company, he proclaimed beforehand that this will be, I promise, the last time we will sing together this song.
He did just say this song. He was very specific about it being the last time for that song, not songs generally.
Exactly.
You have been warned.
You saw through that. Well, I don't mind. I like singing, so. And I like to see my colleagues highly embarrassed.
And were they?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They were. I got a Snapchat from one of my colleagues with the text, tending my resignation. So, yeah, I think Allsång is a cause for a lot of turnover in Norwegian companies.
And when you say turnover, you mean churn, right? You mean people just going, I'm out, I'm done.
Mm.
Wow. That's a very different thing from UK life and UK corporate life.
Yeah, and in Denmark, they actually have more of a culture of this. So they have actually drinking songs with lyrics and stuff that people know and are humorous and so on.
I guess that's what comes of being next to Germany. Mm. It seems like the kind of thing that would cross borders very easily.
We will have to have the Deutsche episode.
Yeah.
For some reason, the Germans again are invading my space.
Just on the point of having an evening with colleagues and drinking and singing, I have been again very pleasantly surprised by the amount of drunken hugging that I have received as an employee of this company. Non-standard for a UK person, I would say. Drunken hugging occurs in the UK when you go drink with your colleagues. Usually, like, it varies. I'm sure it varies a great deal. But in my experience, it's mostly when you're leaving and it's your leaving drinks. And everyone wants to say goodbye to you. But they wouldn't usually hug you before that. Sometimes, but not usually. Here, an amount of drunken hugging has taken place that I find quite charming.
Hmm.
Not that our colleagues drink to excess, you understand.
Interesting. I wonder why that is. Because you are not usually hugged outside of drinking.
No one hugs in Norway unless they're drunk?
And if you do, we do it awkwardly.
Oh, awkward hugging I can totally get with. That's a British tradition as well, yeah.
Sort of a lay sociological explanation. Perhaps we are a bit lonely. Perhaps we are a bit removed somehow, and the influence of alcohol allows us to be closer. I don't know.
Hmm. It's sweet anyway. I took it in the spirit, no pun intended, that it was meant, which is to say, thank you, how lovely. How nice that colleagues want to hug you.
But because now we are in the decade of trigger warnings and being very, very conscious of all the things you perhaps should not do to any of your colleagues, which would entail body parts getting close together. Is this problematic in some way also? I'm just playing the... I don't think the devil's advocate, but some deity's advocate.
It could be taken as such. I do not personally feel that anyone has touched me inappropriately. I'm sure there is a school of thought that says you should never touch your colleagues. I don't have a problem with it. I don't feel uncomfortable about it. Being British, I would probably not volunteer it first.
I guess what I'm trying to say is, for all you repressed Americans over there, come to Norway to get some hugging.
Yeah,
we will hug you. What are you doing,
Queen?
This is making me highly uncomfortable.
I'm sorry, I'll stop. I'm not going to sing.
Mm.
It was a "we will hug you" thing. I'll move on. We'll edit this out. Everything's fine. there is a really interesting thing there, like about litigation culture. And I don't mean to say it's not necessarily an automatic flip-flop from someone I work with did something I found uncomfortable to I have to sue. But it's kind of in the soup, if you like, in the kind of, certainly in UK culture, that in the ether, that
it's at least a legitimate threat.
You mean like to companies or to people individually?
To people, or I'll sue you.
Oh, I'll sue you. Yeah. It happens. Clearly, people get sued. I don't know whether British culture is more litigious than Norwegian culture. To take the more individual perspective, I'm just wondering, like, it's a completely legitimate thing to feel. I am uncomfortable. Something happened at work with a colleague, blah, blah, blah. This made me very uncomfortable. I want to do something about it. I am not okay with it, you know, for like whatever reason, personal or whatever. And I don't know how much that conversation goes on in Norway. I know that it probably doesn't happen as often as it should in the UK. Like, there's a long tail on this of, you know, kind of pre-feminist women being put into really awkward situations and not wanting to make a fuss for fear of consequences. And it's usually women, not always, but... Is that a thing here?
Yeah, well, I think we have perhaps come a bit farther on not being... what's the word? I don't even know the word, right? We are so far ahead that we have forgotten the word for being...
Whatever the opposite of egalitarian is.
Yeah.
Really?
But I was talking about being nice to each other at the workplace and not being misogynist. Yeah.
Okay, so you're totally over being nice to people in the workplace, and now it's just all about misogyny, right?
No, the opposite, right? So the political normal is that of gender equality and not being a creep, except at the Christmas table. Than it's often usual. So yeah. But it certainly happens. There are certainly sexist people in Norway as well. But I don't think we use the court to settle those cases as much. Because we have systems and organizations and so on.
I suspect it's pretty much the same in the UK. There are a number of reasons why someone might not take it to court, but like there are also levels before that, right? Like you go to your employer, you know, you have representation internally.
Yeah. We are not... People don't take each other to court in Norway.
Okay, why not?
Don't think.
That's a terrible question. Why should we in the UK? You don't have to justify that.
Because I think, it's crazy expensive. I think that it's inconvenient, and there are alternatives. And I think if you have this kind of conflict, you would be advised to do it in what we call a konfliktråd, which would be sort of a where you are invited to talk it out and find
some kind of an agreement, mediation or conflict resolution setting. Yeah, I believe they exist in the UK as well. I don't know how common they are. I don't want to give the impression that everyone in the UK is like suing each other all the time. It feels like a culture though that has grown in the last 20 or 30 years, maybe.
And I very seldom hear about people that sue companies for some reason, or it's usually if there are a work employee-related conflict, I guess. Mm.
The cases I read about tend to come from the US, mostly.
Mm. We don't usually microwave our cats in Norway.
Thanks, I was about to ask about that.
but you know why? You know the reference?
Because it was cold and wet, right? And someone... Yeah. I heard it was a dog, but yeah, same. Maybe it's not true. Maybe it's just an urban myth.
Well, it's kind of these stories that we like to tell about the Americans, I guess.
There's lots of Americans listening to this podcast. Hi, Americans. We like you.
Yeah, and if you need to fled your country in the next days, if you need to flee your country in the next days, you can't come to Norway. I'm sorry.
Why can't I come to Norway?
Because we are occupied with throwing foreigners out.
But these people are white. Some of them, at least.
That's true.
Yeah.
And would you like to be next to Russia? I don't know.
I don't know if I like being next to Russia.
I don't feel Russia as much. We did it kind of like, how long has it been? 20 years ago or something? A bit more?
What was the feeling?
I think I was so young then that I don't really remember, actually. But I remember being somewhat afraid about the nuclear war.
You are a child of the 80s.
Hmm.
That was the defining note.
And now we get to experience it again.
Yay! Yeah.
Nothing like everyday existential crisis, right?
Yeah. Yeah, because...
So have our listeners, are they now more competent and ready to socialize with Norwegians? Have we given them the cues and the rules and the how-tos?
I feel that a great deal of that conversation has revolved around drink. And I have friends who don't all drink. Are they completely screwed in terms of Norwegian social life?
They could always join a religion. Religion is actually, if you want to socialize in Norway and find it difficult, you can join a religion. And I guess this would count for almost everywhere, but yeah.
Okay.
Evangelical Christians are really great at socializing. They will take you in, no problem. And you will get to sing and do all the things.
But if you're an atheist and you don't drink, are you out of luck?
If you are really... I know many Christian atheists.
No, atheists and so don't drink, not atheists and don't believe in God.
Like a Richard Dawkins atheist?
That's a little bit more ferocious.
You're doomed to not have friends.
Yeah. Yeah, if you behave like that, you're not going to have any friends. That's fine. Yeah, no. No, nice, you know, like humanist atheists. I know some.
And if you don't want to mingle with the religious, what do you do? Well, then you join a sport.
Yeah. I read a thing.
Or a choir.
And I don't know if this is true. That if you socialize in a particular framework, have we talked about this before? If you socialize within like a particular context, like choir or a football team or whatever, you don't take the socializing out of that framework. It lives in that space.
Yeah, yeah. You have mentioned that. I don't think on a podcast, but I would think. Yeah, you're kind of right. Or at least it will be a long time, I guess.
How long are we talking?
Years. Decades. Oh, it always depends on the individuals, right? And some people are more ready to take new people in their social circles.
Compartmentalize.
But, I guess Norwegians tend to compartmentalize their social circles. and to cross the beam, as you say. I don't know the trick. Perhaps a life and death situation would help.
That seems a little bit extreme. Hi, I know we've only been playing football together for 5 years, but my mother is on her deathbed, and please come to dinner with me. Wait, what?
But yeah, perhaps social chemistry or something. I don't know. It's interesting.
It's interesting that
it's hard. It's hard for Norwegians as well. It's not just a Norwegian foreigner thing.
Okay. It's interesting that you didn't reject that idea totally out of hand. Like, it's a stereotype, I guess, that all the kind of socializing in Norway stays very much in its own box. Like, you know, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, or what happens at, like, football stays in football. It's interesting that you can't just categorically say, no, that's not true.
But perhaps it has something to do with our age group or something, that I guess our colleagues and stuff, they have fairly new established families, and with families, you have family friends, most often kids, families with other kids. I guess, yeah. Kids would be somewhat of a social catalyst.
Hmm.
So if you send your kid to the kindergarten and they find a friend, you will probably have to socialize with their parents. And if you're lucky, you hit it off, and then you have friends. Then your social circle has increased. Right.
That seems like a very loaded transaction. Like, what if you don't like them? Awkward?
Well, you don't get friends.
It's tough being a parent. Tough being a parent.
I wouldn't know.
Me neither, but it looks tough for many reasons.
Yeah, I guess so.
When my mum came to the UK first, she ended up perhaps inevitably in the company of other Czech people, and the only thing that they had in common was that they were Czech. And that did not cut it for her, because that's not enough, right? This is a thing I'm keen to avoid doing myself. It's not like I'm avoiding British people. I will. But it's just, there has to be, you have to have more in common than coming from the same country, the same piece of rock.
Yeah, then again, when you say that, we have a not insignificant amount of Norwegians that travel to Spain every year. And in Spain, Norwegians will tend to group together and be friends across the beams and so on in Spain.
Some kind of solidarity? Like, we better stick together, because...
Or gosh. Fear for... It's the tiny bit of racism again. Perhaps racism is a bit strong, but at least...
Whatever the dilute version of racism is.
So yeah, but it's that's perhaps the narcissism of small differences between Spain and Spanish and Norwegians. I don't know.
I wonder, given the time, I wonder whether we should move on to pick of the week stuff, because there's so much more we could talk about. I'm happy to keep talking. I don't mind.
Let's. Should I?
Yeah,
do
you
that?
Picked a thing.
I picked a thing. I called it an anti-pick.
Okay.
Which now is a word. Because, well, I thought that when we are talking about all the social mores and all that, I have to mention that this is a it's a thing. It's a genre, as you say. And it's the outsider's view on Norway and Norwegians, right? I think this pick emerged from a Facebook page, I guess, where this, I think, actually, he's a researcher or something at NTNU. Julien Borel is Canadian, French-Canadian, I will guess. He came to Norway and he was on the same mission as you, right? To understand and to be integrated to the Norwegian society. And he drew down his observations. And he did it in a, I would guess, fairly funny way. Taking us on the point. Is that something that you could say?
Say more?
Taking us on the corn, as we would say in Norwegian.
I have no idea what that means. It sounds like a great phrase, but what is it?
Well, sort of pinpointing the essential, right?
Okay, getting to the nub of the issue, or like really nailing it?
Something like that. Yeah, really nailing it. When it comes to Norwegians and all these social rules and norms and so on.
Does he nail it?
And this is the thing, because I kind of hate this genre, and I guess we are sort of doing it ourselves, but it's something that, well, I try to reflect on why it rubs me the wrong way, but I don't know. It just, perhaps it's something to do with, it's mostly, I guess, stereotype that we exercise ourselves and are not kind of true.
Because, is it okay if a Norwegian does it, but it's not okay if a foreigner does it?
No, not really that either. Because I think it tends to paint this picture which is either not representative or sort of characterized. And I'm not against characterizations of Norwegians at all, but I think perhaps it could be better.
I swear to God, I did not set this up, but you know the thing I was talking about before, about frames and socializing? It came from one of these books.
Yeah, I know where you get it from.
Burn!
Yeah, I know. And I confirmed it, right?
You did. So, look, you did. Right here. Right here.
The hypocrite.
No, it's okay to be ambivalent about it. I get it. It's complicated.
But I guess what I'm afraid of, that people would read this book seriously.
And the author actually says don't, though, right?
Hmm?
Like, the author actually says don't read this seriously. He says read it critically. He says read this and take it in, but take it with a pinch of salt and think very, very hard, or at least he did in the cover of the one that I read. Think very, very hard about what is represented here.
But you are in the 0.2% that actually reads the cover and not just look at the pictures.
Well, I also looked at the pictures. Yeah, I don't know. I thought it was a useful disclaimer, right? Like, he's saying there's maybe a grain of truth here. But this is complicated.
I don't mean to come down on this lovely Canadian author, but yeah, it's something with to do with, and I guess I would be as skeptical with the British or French or whatever version of this kind of literature.
I'm sure if we were to review the British equivalent of this, I would like want to tear the person a new one. I mean, really, I can. It's really complicated territory, and it's not just about who is this foreign person coming in and telling us what we're like. I think it doesn't admit the diversity of responses, right?
Perhaps it's the lack of dialogue that rubs me the wrong way.
You shouldn't read books then if that cheeses you.
Yeah, well, but I don't have a say, right? And also the fact that because he's foreign, he can claim a certain objectivity, right? That we cannot. That also I find perhaps a bit irritating.
Well,
did I invent colonialism right now?
Sorry, what now? That sounds like a medical procedure. I mean, from my perspective,
pun intended.
Indeed. From my perspective, here's a guy who doesn't know how to be a Norwegian because he can't because he's foreign. And that's forever the problem I'm going to have as well, right? Is how do you know that what you have is real and not based on people's responses to you as a foreign person, however good at Norwegian one might be?
But everything that you have said up to this point tells me that you're doing... It doesn't seem hard to not... Let me rephrase that. You haven't given me much evidence that you are sort of not Norwegian yet. Because you are being hugged, you are being touched, you walk around in your socks, you even had Pinochet twice.
Well,
again, any exciting narrative needs tension, and there are, as of yet, no tension to be found.
Well, that's why this podcast is called Small Differences and not Huge In Your Face Differences, right? Is that it's super easy to come here as a British person if you have a little bit of an open mind and are not actually revulsed by the idea of foreign people.
I guess I urge you to be open to more tension, to more cultural tension in your life. Because I begin to worry that that our podcast will be a long tale of self-confirmative anecdotes of why Norway is so awesome.
Is there anything wrong with that? I mean, like, given the this week in politics here in Norway, like, maybe you could use a little good PR. Or does it all just invariably become kind of the next hygge?
Touché.
Gesundheit.
Touche. Right, your cultural pick of the week, please.
My cultural pick. I spent a little bit of time this week listening to podcasts, as I do quite a lot at the moment, to try and get more Norwegian into my ears. And there's a... I've only listened to one episode of this so far. This is a podcast called Strøm Vasenius, which are the respective surnames, I think, of the people who present it. It was great. I really liked it. It's a man and a woman talking about stuff. I haven't gone back to listen to the previous ones. This one, they set it up to play kind of around New Year. And they were talking about what happens when the year ends. I know we should have done this, like, we should have talked about this, like, 2 weeks ago. It would have been more current, but hey, such is podcast life. Anyway, people are going to stumble on this in, like, 6 months, so it doesn't matter. And they talked about a couple of things in relation to New Year that I thought were really interesting. So one of the things they talked about is the kind of the what to do in the face of this huge symbol that is the end of an old year and the start of a new year. And the pressure to kind of make it a big deal and the pressure to do a thing and who do you do it with? And is it the same people that you spent the last New Year's Eve with? And like, is that okay? Or are you basically locked into this event now forever until you die? And what happens if your relationship breaks up? And is it okay to bring someone new into this sort of established milieu? And it was great. I don't know, they have a very easy dialogue. I take it that they've been doing this for a long time. And it was just this completely engaging conversation about everything and nothing. It was really interesting. Is there a lot of pressure to do these things at New Year here?
And for all you English-speaking people out there, it's in Norwegian, so...
Sorry.
Screw you!
I hesitated. I did hesitate over recommending something that was in Norwegian, but I wanted to talk about it because it was kind of culturally interesting.
Yeah, as for the Nyttårsaften or New Year's Eve, yeah, it's a dilemma where you should spend it, because it's a celebration for friends, I guess,
and not more than family.
As, yeah.
Okay.
As I said, you I'll tend some of these to... terms, but you tend to have your different groups of friends, and you can only be one place at a time, right? But certainly, you have this problem in the UK as well.
I think one of the things that differentiates this from the UK, perhaps, is that people's friendships in the UK tend to bleed more than we have described here across different settings like work, social, hobby, whatever, sports, if you do sport. So there's not, it's not like you have several different plates of food to choose from necessarily. I think it's probably a more obvious gravity well into which you naturally fall at New Year if you're the kind of person to spend it with other people.
So a good New Year's resolution for Norwegians would
do what with your friends?
Blend your friends. Right, word of the week. I guess you have to start.
My word is kebabnorsk. And the first time that I heard this, I was horrified. Because the context that I heard it in made it sound as though this was a word by white Norwegians that was used to describe non-white Norwegians. And, like, if someone's not white, the kind of, it's just painful for me to talk about this. The idea that they might necessarily, like, be associated with someone who sells kebabs, for example, which I take to be the connection there. Oh my God. That's, please tell me this is not so.
I should tell you now that is not so.
Well, only if that's true.
Or do you have the answer?
I do not have the answer. It's a word that comes up every now and again. And then it came up again in context of scum. And it was a completely different context. And it made me think, well, maybe I've completely misinterpreted this word. So what's happening with kebabnorsk?
That's a complex one. Because, yeah, you could use it derogatory. But I guess it has become more of a neutral linguistic category.
What does it mean?
Well, it's Norwegian with loan words from, I would guess, usually either Kurdish or Persian or Arabic or I think even Spanish and so on. So one of my first word of the weeks were lø, which is a Norwegianification of an Arabic word. So that would sort of be included in kebab norsk. But I think you can talk about it without having this negative connotation. But you also could.
How would you use it in a context that is not offensive?
Well, I have done a bit of Wikipedia-ing. Is that a verb?
It is now.
And there's even a master thesis on kebabnorsk. So I guess if you use it in an academic setting, it will be okay.
That's such a lame cop-out, though. Anything actually, is okay if used in an academic setting by those terms.
That's true. But actually, for... Oh my God, it's almost 20 years ago. We had this movie from, I guess, the urban... immigrant part of Oslo, which dealt with how how it was being young there and being a young second generation immigrant called Spa. And this word Spa was or is this kind of kebab norsk. And it means something like cool or something like that. And this, I think, introduced the concept of kebab norsk to all of Norway, because I guess every school went to cinema to see this movie. So yeah. And since that, I guess it has become a part of Norwegian.
Okay.
That's how some people talk.
When you say that's how some people talk, by bringing in a lot of loan words from sort of the Middle East or Spain or places. Okay.
And in among the youth, I think it's more cool than not. So it's more about playfulness with language and so on than, yeah.
It was pretty much by definition anti-establishment, right? So you can imagine it being cool for young people who are not, you know, traditionally, like, well up there with the establishment, mostly.
So I brought along a fresh, completely new word for you.
I'm slightly daunted by this word.
And it was invented in our Slack channel at work just some hours ago, I guess.
I missed it. Which channel?
The Bergen channel, which you are not.
I'm not invited to the Bergen channel. I'm not bitter. It's going to take years for me to make friends with the Bergen channel. It's a whole other channel.
And the word is, and this will be weird even for Norwegians, but the word is slafseslusk. Can you say that? Slafseslusk.
Well, I want to point out, if I was going to pronounce this, I would say slafseslusk, but because of your accent slash dialect, you say slafseslusk.
I have a very dry mouth now, so perhaps it influences that. But yeah, so it consists of two words, slafse and slusk. And now I'll learn that slusk is actually a word for a worker or like a road worker or something. But it's not used like that anymore. It's more used for people that are a bit messy and careful and rude, perhaps. So there's a hidden stratospheric derogatory connotation. But yeah, and the reason that it was invented was that I was on a bus and someone had the idea that they would eat their warm dinner at the bus.
While riding the bus?
While riding the bus.
Is this not a thing you can do in Norway?
And they ate, I guess you could call it a Norwegian curry, namely lapskaus. And the smell was all over the bus and pretty bothersome. And we invented the word slafseslusk for this kind of person that take hot food into a small occupied space.
Where does the slafse come from?
That's the word, that's the sound that comes from your mouth when you are particularly enjoying food.
Oh, wow. So it's
I will not make that sound now. Because...
Thank you. Our listeners, thank you. I thank you. Is it someone who's kind of a blissfully messy eater and doesn't care? Or...
Yeah, it's like a slurpy mouth or something.
Oh, It's very onomatopoeic. I like that.
Yeah, that was the term I was afraid for.
We'll put that on your list as well for next time.
And the backstory is that one of our designers has made ad campaign for our local bus company that addresses how you should behave yourself, not occupy two seats at once, and so on.
Can I tell you a joke?
You can.
A cow gets onto a bus. You have to suspend disbelief. It's that kind of joke. A cow gets onto a bus and the bus is full.
Well, that happens in Norway.
Oh, okay. Well, a cow gets onto a bus.
As you do.
As you do. As cows do. And the bus is full. There's no room to sit except for one double seat where there is a chicken sitting, occupying. Don't laugh. This is a serious joke.
I think there's, I know where it's headed.
There is a chicken sitting, occupying both of the seats together. And the cow says to the chicken, "Move." And the chicken says, "Fuck off."
Yeah. True story.
True story. It happened here.
Yeah. I think perhaps we are at the end of the sixth installment of Small Differences, your favorite program. We are saving ourselves for the seventh episode.
What are we going to tell people at the end of the seventh episode? How are we going to sustain that, you know, tension?
We should give a teaser, right?
Yeah. Oh, we decided we were going to talk about language, right? Did you say language?
Yeah, we are.
Yeah.
We said language, and not that kind of language, like the language, but just language.
Just language. We're going to get our nerd on in episode 7, I think is what we're saying.
Then we are going to get our nerd on.
Yeah, okay, we're going to get our nerd on even more.
Full nerdery and lay linguistics.
Yes. Oh God, there is going to be a wealth of uninformed opinion here, at least from my end.
And certainly from my end.
Outstanding.
And people are continuing asking about the swearing episode. And I think we should just show our rags here and admit that we are pushing the swearing episode way ahead to keep you on your seats looking for the next episode of this weird podcast.
We've got to keep you on the hook because honestly, if we'd made the swearing episode like episode 2, people would just stop, right? And clearly, I'm not going to provide you any dramatic tension here, so we have to go elsewhere for that.
We will make you love us.
Eventually.
And then give you all the swearing.
It's called Stockholm Syndrome.
I think that's Oslo Syndrome, actually.
Oh, Bergen's not the center of the universe anymore?
We are like the Death Star of the universe. Takk for at du hørte på. Ha det bra.
Takk for at du hørte på. Ha det bra.